chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. I'm thrilled to have Dave Sanderson on the show today. Dave is a speaker, author, and noted authority on personal leadership and philanthropist. If you like this episode today, please go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave us a 5-star rating. Well, Dave Sanderson, thank you so much for making the time to be on the Something Extra podcast today. I have been looking so forward to this time with you, and you and I have known each other probably for close to 10 years now.
It is about 9 years. I was looking at the other day. It's 9 years ago.
And here's what happened. You were in St. Louis and you were speaking for the American Red Cross, and it was at a breakfast, and I came up to you afterwards and we had a nice exchange, and you and I just remained friends. We've remained connected. So, you know, I really want our listeners to always understand, you never know where connections are going to come from, but you got to nurture them, right? You and I have stayed connected. You know, we are talking via LinkedIn for this last 9 years. And I said, hey, can you please come on and share your story? Because you've got such a powerful story. So thank you so much for making the time to be on the show today.
Thank you for having me, Lisa. It has been a great 9 years. And that's exactly right. And we've met each other, but we stayed in contact. And that's what's about building relationships.
So you're in Charlotte, but you did not grow up in Charlotte. I want to go back because, Dave, the other thing that I realized, there's so many defining moments along our life and lessons learned, people that come in and out of our life that teach us things. And you have had some amazing mentors. But I want to take it back to your mom and dad. I know they're not with us anymore, but I know how instrumental they were in your life. So I'd love for you to go back. I know you grew up in Hillsboro. Tell me a little bit about growing up.
Thank you very much. I had parents who grew up in the Midwest from Illinois. My entire family's from Illinois. And my dad got transferred when I was just very young to Ohio. And I grew up in a small town outside of Cincinnati. I was very blessed to have parents who instilled the Midwestern values, you know, hold people accountable, responsible. You know, when you got out of line, things were corrected very quickly. So you understood. But one of the things that also really resonated from that time is we lived in a small town where everybody knew each other and everybody watched out for each other. I was very blessed to have a community around me that even when we were out, we could stay out till after dark because other people were watching after you. So I think my mom and dad, I think it was one of the greatest things that they did is let us grow up in a small town where people could trust each other and build that understanding of values.
I mean, there is definitely something to that. But I know you were incredibly athletic, but your mom, which is really interesting to me, your mom was a real inspiration for that because she was very athletic.
You know, my dad was an athlete in his high school career, but you know, back in the 40s and early 50s, women weren't playing sports, but she grew up a tomboy. My grandparents had three girls, and she was the middle one, and she, like I was the middle one, and she was the athletic one, and she would play with the boys all the time, and she'd warm up the pitchers in the high school baseball team, because they wouldn't let her play baseball.
Right.
They didn't have a softball team, so she'd warm up the boys. She spent a lot of time with me developing my athletic skills and all different. She believed in cross-training everything. She didn't believe in just going one sport, which is different these days, which I think is a little bit of a challenge for these kids, because they don't get to experience all the different aspects of all the different sports, where I think the Tiger Woods syndrome has come in, where if you focus on one thing, you'll get it. which is true, but you miss out on so many different aspects and development. So I think my mom was definitely an inspiration, but she's also a very good athlete.
Yeah. Wow. That is so awesome. Well, I know that that just taught you so much. And scouting was a huge thing. And I think it was your mom that introduced you to Scoutmaster Walker, and he became very instrumental in your life. Tell me a little bit about that journey. And then, you know, I want you to tell me about the worst decisions you said you ever made.
You know, one of the things growing up in a small town, scouting was an outlet that kept the kids together and kept the kids occupied, but also taught them life skills. In our little town, as you talked about Lawson Walker, he was the scout master, and he actually got his Eagle Scout badge back in the early 1918 or 1919, I think whatever year it was. He was an older gentleman back in the late 60s and early 70s. He really believed in scouting. He really taught the values and, you know, skill sets that you would need. So once I had the opportunity, my mom signed me up, and I was, you know, I spent a lot of time. He spent a lot of time with me developing me, and I was fast tracking. I wanted to be the youngest Eagle Scout in Hillsboro. And that was my goal. I mean, I was fast tracking 13, 14 years old. I want to be the Eagle Scout. I want to get it. And I want to sort of stand out. And I was driven that way. But unfortunately, my dad got transferred to Virginia, which meant I was not going to make. I was a life scout at that point. And I was one step away, and I was fast tracking, and we were doing the right things. And so anytime you move, something's going to change. There's a lot of changes in your life. And I was very athletic. So when we got to Virginia, he set me up over in Virginia with another troop, which was very nice of him. But that troop's focus was really in development, which is great. But I was already a life scout at 12, and these guys were like first class. And so I was like looked at as developing and not so much growing. So, and I had to make a decision. And the decision I made is I was going to go full in athletics, try to get the scholarship and go for it. And when I told my mom and dad this, I think it was 13, my mom told me that'd be the worst decision in your life. She said, you are this close to getting Eagle. I had four badges left, and I was on the 5-yard line. I had a project and four more badges to go, and I gave up. And I went the athletic direction, which served me well, but my mother was right. There are decisions you make in life, could be good or bad, but she told me that's going to be the worst decision. It was one of the worst decisions I've ever made, because one of the things I realized is it's a heck of an accomplishment, but just the pride you have from accomplishment can take you so many places you would never be able to understand. I mean, you own a company, and I work for companies, and one of the things, when I talk to my HR people and I talk to them, I've asked them a question, you're an Eagle Scout or a Gold Scout, you go automatically to the top of the line.
Yeah, it's one of the things you look for when you're recruiting talent.
Back in the 70s, I didn't realize that. So at least, yeah, that was the worst decision I ever made. I look back at that, it's like, when I remember that conversation, and my mom was devastated. And the worst thing I think you could do is devastate your parents. So upset them that, you know, you're making such a bad decision, but they let you live with that decision. Because one of the things my mom taught me, and we all know, is every decision has a consequence.
Personal responsibility and ownership of those decisions, right, Dave? The other thing that I love about it, your mom told you, because you said, I want to be the youngest Eagle Scout in Hillsboro. And she told you, write it down.
And she always held me that standard, Lisa. She'd always remind me of that, which was great, because you don't know where your mentors are ever going to come from. And my mother was really the first mentor that I had, but candidly, she was so close, you don't look at your parents like that.
Yeah, I always say, you know, you want other people coming into your children's lives and speaking truth into them. So that's what I said at the beginning. You've had so many people like that, Dave, in your life.
Yep.
So I want you to tell our listeners what your dad told you when you graduated from college.
I graduated from college, and I actually had to pay my last 3 years because I messed up the first year. And he said, I'm not paying for C's. So for me to go back to college, I had to get loans and work. So that was a great lesson. When I got done and I came back to Winchester, Virginia, where my parents were living, he said, you got 30 days to be out of the house, 30 days to find a job. And at first, I didn't believe him. Now, I should have believed my dad, because candidly, he never lied to me. I didn't realize that until we were getting close. And he's like, you know, 30 days, you're out of the house. And in 30 days, I did not have a job, and I was not out of the house. So my dad took it upon himself to make sure I found a job. And he hooked me up with a friend of his who was an area manager for Howard Johnson. I didn't know anything about restaurants, but I had a job and I was out of the house. So, you know, he accomplished his goal and I accomplished my goal. At least I had a job and out of the house. But, you know, I think that was a great lesson for me. Likewise, as you know, my dad had standards. And you graduate, you get a job. You're not sitting around the house drinking beer and playing games. And so it taught me a great lesson about, you know, holding yourself to standards.
I mean, to some people that may seem really harsh, but you know what? Your dad could have easily let you do that, Dave, you know, but I always say what is the easy route is not always the best route, you know, and sometimes really it taught you to stand on your feet.
Well, he grew up during the Depression back in the 30s, right? Both his parents were working. My grandparents were working. So he was gone by himself. He really had to manage himself. And they basically told him the same thing, you know, back when he graduated from, you know, Bradley University, it's time to get a job. The standard they had back in the 30s and 40s, all he was doing was implementing what he learned. But it was a great lesson because that generation, I think, really got it.
I do too.
They understood what it took to not only support a family, but maintain a country and live those freedoms that we were given.
So you got this job at Howard Johnson. You continued to move through the restaurant business and doing well. But, you know, there was another defining moment. You were serving a couple, and this was Bill and Bonnie.
I was a second assistant restaurant manager at Howard Johnson. I'm the guy working second and third shift. You know, I'm not working 9 to 5, right? And I was working my way up, but there was a couple that would come into the restaurant every night for their coffee and ice cream, and we would talk. Older couple, he was 77 at that point in time. He drove a pickup truck, wore a flannel shirt. He was from North Carolina. But as we were talking, and you know, he'd tell me these stories, and it was great because I was just listening, right? It was, I learned some things. And then I was starting to date my future wife, and I had no money. You know, I was making $13,000 a year. I had no money. And I wanted to take her on a date, and he gave me a couple of movie passes. Here, take your girl out. And by the way, just tell me about your experience. I said, okay, cool. So I get to the movie theater. I hand the tickets to this gentleman. He says, tell Mr. Bill, hey. I said, all right. Had a great experience. Came back. I said, this guy told me to tell you, hey. He goes, yeah, I own that theater. He said, by the way, I have over 80 movie theaters and restaurants throughout the Carolinas.
Wow.
I found out later he was known as the Sam Walton of Charlotte because he was a guy that you would never know that had more money than anybody. And he and I were talking. But fast forward to December 24th of 1984. This is where things in my life radically started to change. Because he came into the restaurant, it was Christmas Eve, and he said, I want to show you what I got Bonnie for Christmas. We walked out in the parking lot. It was a brand new blue Corvette. Now, I was 23 years old. I couldn't spell Corvette. I'd never seen a Corvette. And he looked at me and said, here, let's take a ride. He threw me the keys, and we jumped in the car, and he said, just go down to Woodlawn Road and back. And we drove down and come back. I said, Bill, Bonnie's going to dig this, man. He goes, you need one of these. I said, Bill, I'm making $13,000 a year. I can barely afford my rent. He goes, that's your problem. He said, it's your mindset. He said, can I sort of give you the lessons about the mindset of success? So from that point for the next 13 years, Lisa, he was teaching me these lessons. He was introducing me to people around Charlotte that he was running with. And so I was learning all these things. It was an amazing time because I was transitioning into more restaurants and then sales. And I was a leader and I was having problems and my family stuff. I mean, there's all these things, but he would teach me these lessons. So we fast forward to 1997, and my mom passes away in April of that year. My sister and I had to basically take care of him because my dad was a wreck. Like we talked about, my dad grew up during the Depression where mom did everything. He couldn't write a check. He couldn't boil water. He couldn't wash clothes. He could do nothing. And now his wife's gone. So my sister and I do all the funeral planning. And it was, so I was in business mode. Let's get it done, right? And my wife's like, you got to slow down. I was like, no, I got to go. And I got back to Charlotte and I was a wreck. Bill calls me to come. I want you to come over to my house. He had a beautiful house, a place called Myers Park here in Charlotte. He walked in and he sits down next to the chair with me. And he said, I got two things I want to talk to you about. First, he said, I got lung cancer. Now, Bill smoked 2 packs of unfiltered Camels a day since 1929. So, I mean, it was catching up. But second, he's holding these notes. I sat down and laid them on my lap because I want to give these to you. I said, what are they? He goes, these are the notes I took in 1929. When my mentor sat down with me and taught me the same things I've been teaching you. But he said, you got to promise me one thing. Do not let it die with you. And that was one of the last things he ever said to me. Because Bill passed away in September of 1997. But now I've got these notes.
Yeah, that's, I want to dig in a little bit to that. We've got a lot more to talk about, Dave. But we'll take a quick break and we'll be right back with Dave Sanderson.
Let's face it, the future is mobile. There's a good chance that you are listening to this show right now on your phone. Have you explored how you can move your business mobile too? Our mobile apps team at Technology Partners makes it their mission to move our clients into the hands of their employees and customers and change their business processes to meet the demands of their users. Let's work together and build a dynamic mobile app for your team. Go to tpi.co/mobile apps and get the conversation started about how we can help you get your new application off the ground.
All right, everybody. Well, welcome back to the Something Extra podcast with Dave Sanderson. So Dave, you know, we just got finished talking about Bill. What an amazing gift, you know, and you and I have talked about this offline. He didn't have to do that. He could have just lived his life and drove around in their new Corvette. And, you know, he really didn't have to build into you. But I know that experience is part of your DNA now, and you're going around and your mission and your purpose is to help other people. But I want to dig into the book. So I've got your books. I don't have your new one. I know it's coming out in 2 weeks. I've got Moments Matter, and we'll be talking about that one. And then the other book that I've done more digging into is God Gives You the Lessons When You're Ready. And this is basically you fulfilling your promise to Bill.
That's correct.
You know, that you would not let those lessons die. So I do want to talk about a couple of these principles, but because that's what he taught you, the principles and the mindset of personal leadership and success. So the first principle is demand more of yourself than others expect.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that, you know, he would talk to me about consistently is people have tried to live at their own standards and they expect you to live at their standards. And a lot of people who are not leaders or not have not excelled play at a very low standard. And he said, always play to your standards or above. So, you know, he always tell me these stories about, you know, how his mentor always expected him to demand more from himself than anybody else would ever do. And you see this even like with a Michael Jordan, right? Michael Jordan talks about this. He and Dr. J always did more than anybody else because they demanded more of themselves. And this is a part of true personal leadership. You got to lead yourself first. And how do you lead yourself first and go ahead in front of people, be the person leading, is demand more of yourself, because then you'll raise everybody else's standard up. And once you raise standards up, now you all play a different standard and you can accomplish anything.
You know, and others are watching you, right, Dave? So it's like, really, if we raise the bar on ourselves, it really inspires, you know, if we're leading a team, it will inspire our team to raise their own bar. Right? And what is expected. But I love this one. Principle three is outside in, inside out. Talk to us a little bit about that one.
That was an interesting, you know, discussion in time. Most people look at themselves first and look outward. But one of the principles he always talked to me about leadership and giving first is look at the bigger picture first and see how you then can affect the bigger picture. And one of the things I talk about is, and we came to realization shortly after the miracle on the Hudson, it was how and everybody's got a world view, and people basically live their lives based on the view they have of their entire world, or what they call the blueprint of their lives. So if you look inside out, you're always looking at what's best for you is to affect somebody else. If you look at some bigger picture first and how you can affect the bigger picture is when you can have an impact on so many more people. That's how he lived. That's how he built his little, I would call him little empire, because he was always looking at how he could help people. And even during the Depression, when he started building his first theaters, when no one had any money, he had to figure out different strategies and a bigger picture on how he could affect more people when they didn't have any money. So yeah, it's a great lesson for me. And that's why I always look first on the bigger picture. And then I say, okay, how can I impact the bigger picture?
Yeah. And you talk about taking personal responsibility and it starts on the inside. And it really touched my heart because I read the story, Dave, about when you had come to Winchester and you went to the school, there was a special needs boy there. And of course, you know that our youngest has special needs, right? I guess that's probably partly why that touched my heart so much. But you said that he was being picked on and you ended up like slugging one of the boys. You know, you're new to the school. You're brand new. You said, no, everybody else was standing around. Nobody was doing anything. So you took the responsibility on yourself and said, no, this is not right. You slug the boy. You go to the principal's office and you said, oh, no, I may be expelled.
Game's over already. I just got here, right?
You just got here.
Yeah, I was playing sports. I made the 8th grade football team in 7th grade, right? I was excelling. We're in the hallway and this name is Captain John Smith, and the boy has special needs mentally and physically. And this guy named Sperling. I mean, I remember the guy like yesterday, he started picking on him. And I'm like, why are you picking on this kid, right? This kid can't defend himself. He can barely speak. And no one was doing anything. So my dad always said to stand up for those who need to be stood up for, whatever it took. And that's one of the things why I'm so connected with the military, because that's what the military stands for. And the guy took a swipe at me, and I punched him, and then game was on. And fortunately for me, the athletic director's the one who broke it up.
But you were applauded for that. You were applauded for it. So
I stood up for somebody with who needed something, and I didn't get in trouble. And Canley, the assistant principal of Canley, gave me thumbs up and said, I wish more people would do that.
So I'll just go one more here because I think this one is so important. Principle four is no means on. And you talk about practicing optimism. And I mean, this is scientifically shown. People that are more optimistic end up being happier. Honestly, they end up living longer. But it's a choice.
It's a choice. And you know, now in my new talk, one of the things I talk about is a distinction on how you do that. He taught me how important it was to always be optimistic and practice it and focus on turning it around. But now I talk about what's the question you ask yourself consistently when you get into stressful situations. And most of the time, Lisa, people say, why does this always happen to me? I can never get it done. Things always happen to me. And I would ask those questions all the time. But one of the things I learned and one of the things I coach now is how to turn that around. So I really, one of the things I did 10, 11, 12 years ago, right after the miracle on the Hudson, I had changed it around. Is this everything happens for me for a reason, a purpose, and it serves me. And also I twisted my primary question and thought, and all of a sudden I was going down the optimism path. Everything that I do is like, this is serving me some way. I don't know, it may not serve me right now. So one of the things I work on with people, Lisa, is when they go to that negative area, this work on your primary question. What's that question that's always in your head that you keep saying to yourself, and all of a sudden it's bringing you down and you can't cross the finish line? This is one of the greatest strategies I actually talk about right now. And that's why I say, you know, turn it around.
Yeah. Yeah.
Turn around. No means on. Now you're going. Instead of going no, we're going forward.
In 1997, you did start working security for Tony Robbins. And I've known other people that have been on the periphery of Tony Robbins, and you learned so much from him. And one little ism that I just wrote down, a Tony Robbins ism, is change is inevitable.
Change is inevitable. Progress is not.
Yeah. Yeah.
Things are changing so fast now, but is progress happening? And that's what people really want, right? And your business and my business, people want to make progress towards their outcomes. Yeah. And they think change is going to make that happen. Change is not going to make that happen. You got to have a strategy, right? You got to get around people like you and I have had the opportunity to be around who can teach you these nuances, these distinctions that can help you make those 1 to 2 degree changes and shifts to make the progress that all of a sudden opens it up. And being around Tony, I had the honor of not only having security, but I travel with Tony around the world having those intimate talks. He getting into my head, I get into his head and understanding these distinctions. I think he feels it's incumbent on all of us to teach what he teaches to other people. So all I've done is taken what Bill's taught me and just layered it on. Because I think we all have people around us, but are you aware that people are around you will help you?
Self-awareness is really important. I'm glad that you brought that up because I always say many times I learn extraordinary lessons in very ordinary situations, but you got to have the eyes to see it.
It goes back to if you believe in the Bible, which I do. What did Jesus say right before all that stuff started happening? Stay awake.
Yes.
And that was
yes.
A lesson not for that then, but it's like you got to be awake to what's really going on all the time around you, and you will all of a sudden be able to impact other people's lives. But if you don't stay awake, things are going to happen to you instead of for you.
Yeah, that's so good. But, you know, your book, Moments Matter, really captures the experience that I want to talk about now. So on January 15th, 2009, you had an experience that basically, let's see, what do you call it? It's the point in time that changes everything.
It's called my pitch. Point in time that changes everything.
And you were sitting in seat 15A. It was Airways flight 1549. It was January 15th. There's a little bit of significance.
15 follows me. Yes, correct.
Yeah. So what does 15 mean?
Being a leader, one who leads, and one who adds value.
I'd love for you to tell our listeners, for those who haven't heard the story, you've seen the movie Sully. That was about the pilot, right? Who was a veteran pilot. And if you guys had not had him as your pilot, who knows what would have happened, Dave. He really pulled some tricks out of his bag. But tell us the story about what happened on January 15th, 2009.
You know, January 15th, 2009 was just an ordinary day. Travel day, business day, end of a 3-day business trip. You think you're trying to get home to your family early, you know, trying to surprise them. That's good stuff. Until something happens that changes not only that day, but everything. When all of a sudden you hear an explosion on the plane and you're like, I've never heard that on a plane before. And then you look out the window and you see fire coming out. Like, I've never seen that on a plane before. And then you start banking. Okay, we're just going back to the airport. All of a sudden, like, you see the skyline of Manhattan up close. And like, I've never seen that before. And all of a sudden, you look out, you see a bridge coming, like, uh-oh, we're not going to clear this bridge. And something's really seriously happening. And then you hear the captain say his famous words, is your captain brace for impact? And now you know something serious is happening, because he only cleared the bridge by roughly 400 feet on a 600-foot bridge. So we're roughly 1,000 feet at that point, crossing over. You look down, people's faces are looking up, and you're like, whoa, we're really close. And that's the moment you realize you're probably not going to make it, because you're going straight nosedive right into the river. And candidly, I'd never seen a plane crash survive going into water. So basically get everything buttoned up really quick. It's like, you know, you do your final request, and because it may not happen, but all of a sudden you get down and you make it. Hooray for the captain. You did an amazing job, but now you got another problem. The plane's sinking in a river, and it's 36 degree water, and it's 11 degrees outside. And now you got to get out of a sinking plane. So, you know, all of a sudden, you know, everybody's moving, and I get my time to go. And but all of a sudden, something changed that day for me. That was the first moment of the pitch. I talked about the point in time. That was the first moment, because when I got to the aisle and I was going out that door at 10F, I'm like, I hear my mother. My mother passed away, as you heard earlier, in 1997. But I heard her say in my head, yeah, if you do the right thing, God will take care of you. And see, my mother never lied to me. So, you know, I had to make a decision. I tell people, these are the decision points you make. You got to make a decision. You can either go, that's okay, or you can do something. So I climbed over the seats towards the back of the plane to see if anybody needed help. And back in the back is about water, is about chest level deep. But things were moving pretty quick, because the back of the plane, if you saw the side angle, which you see in the cover of that book, the back of the plane's already submerged underwater. So now you're trying to get out. And all you see is water, and water's here. And all of a sudden you see light. It's like, I'm out of here. And you start to get out, but you look out. There's no room on the wing or the boat. It's already filled. As you've seen the picture of the plane in the water, all the wings are already filled. And you're still in the plane. I tell people it was an amazing sight, because all of a sudden, people are being rescued within a couple minutes of this situation happening. There's heroes everywhere. But it was about 7 minutes inside of a sinking plane. I was chest deep in 36 degree water before all of a sudden I felt the plane shift. And my first thought was, this is Titanic, man. This is going down. I got to get out of here. And we talked about this before we started talking. I think my mom and dad, they gave me swimming lessons.
Yes, they did.
Yeah, because if I hadn't had that, I may not be able to get off, because I had to swim for my life. And so all of a sudden I jump in the water and start swimming towards the closest boat into the wing. And the water was 36 degrees. The air temperature was 11 degrees. I was fully clothed. But more importantly, what happened to me is there's also jet fuel in the water. And that's why you see me wearing glasses. I got jet fuel in my eyes. And I didn't know that till later, because they didn't, you know, we were so fast moving. But I finally got there. I don't know how. They're telling me to climb. I can't. And then I hear my mom again.
Can't was not one of her words, right?
I told you. I figured out after she passed, her worldview. We talk about worldview. Her big picture of the world was always, if you can't, you must. She would never let that word come out of her children's mouth, ever. Yep. So I started to reach up, and people grabbed my arms and pulled me on the ferry. And that's how I got onto the ferry. And there's a lot more to that story on the back end. But when you're going through these defining moments, all these lessons you learn come into play.
Yes.
And that's what Moments Matter is. I really talk about where certain times on that situation where these little skills that I learned had to come into play, such as faith. You're going down. You can't even control it. You know, you say that final prayer to whoever you believe in, and all of a sudden you have another shot. So that's what I love about Moments Matter, because I don't think I've ever told you the story how that title came about.
Yeah, it's a couple ladies, right?
I was actually sitting where I'm standing. Wife got a phone call. Neighbors needed help. Two older ladies. Go down, help them fix the TV. No problem. I'm good at that stuff. I love watching TV. I'm good at that. Stay for milk and cookies. But down south, we have these things called parlors. And they had these books on their table, and I was reading the books, and they were about World War II, and I love World War II history. And when they came out, I said, where did you get these? I've never seen these. And they both looked at me and rolled up their sleeves and showed me the letters and numbers in their arm. And they survived a concentration camp. And that's the moment. It's like, I said, you got to tell me the story. I tried to let them film it, but for 2 hours, they told me the story, how they survived. And they always stayed together. The rest of their family perished, but they survived. And when I came back, I was so blown away, told my wife, I called Cindy, who was helping me put together the book. I said, Cindy, I got it. These ladies made all the moments in their life matter. They had a second shot, and they made it. They were in a concentration camp, one of the worst situations in the history of the world. They survived. And it's like, that's it. Because I went through a traumatic life experience. Everybody goes through these experiences, but there's a way to survive. And a lot of it comes to the mindset, staying together, having faith, taking personal responsibility for yourselves. That's what this is all about. So yeah, that moment sticks with me, because it's like every time I sit where I'm sitting right here, I just think about those two older ladies. They're long perished now. They're in the early 80s at that point.
I'm glad you said yes to staying for the milk and cookies. Because you could have been like, I'm sorry, I've got an agenda. I've got things to do. I got to get back, you know? But if you had not have done that, if you had not said yes at that moment, you would not have heard that story and it would not have impacted you the way that it did.
You got to slow down because these lessons are there. As you know, Lisa, these lessons are there. Like you've had some experiences I've read about with you and some experiences, but people need things so quickly right now. They want immediate gratification. But it's all about delayed gratification. It's all about taking it all in.
So good. There's so much packed in here. I hope that our listeners, I hope we've given you just a taste and then you'll get the books and you'll dig in and, you know, just take every opportunity to learn as much as you can and enjoy the experiences along the way, the journey. I always say it's about the journey.
It's about the journey. Exactly right. It's about the journey.
Well, Dave, this is called Something Extra. I have to ask you, what is the something extra that you believe every leader needs?
Well, first, I'm going to tell you a little inside baseball right now. I was still head of security for Tony, and Tony's the only one who called me that night in the hospital. My company didn't call my wife, but he found me. He said, when you get to L.A., because he knew I was coming to L.A. to do all these TV shows and everything. He said, call me. I want to talk to you. So I get to L.A. I'm actually in Burbank getting ready to go on the Bonnie Hunt show, but I had about a couple hours. So I called Tony. I said, Tony, I'm in L.A. He goes, for 2 hours, he was giving me some perspective. And one of the things he kept drilling into me, and this is why I think it's one of the key things that for leaders need to understand. He just always remain humble. There's going to be so many people coming at you for so many things. They'll want things from you. Some people may have some malintent. But if you stay humble, you'll be seen as a leader, a silent leader, and have be a servant leader. And I remember that like it was yesterday when he and I had that conversation. So one of my missions has been, I think, as a part of leadership and personal leadership is always to stay humble because you didn't get here by yourself.
That's right.
I don't care who you are. I don't care if it's the president of the United States. There's other people had to help us get to where we're at. So stay humble.
I'm standing on the shoulder of giants that have gone before you, you know, I mean, humility. That's a good one. Well, Dave, tell us about your new book. I know it's coming up in 2 weeks. How can our listeners find all of this?
Well, thank you. My new book's called From Turmoil to Triumph. And it really talks a little bit about some of the things I talked about today. It really was generated, Lisa, about 2 years ago when I was actually in Winchester, Virginia. I was asked to speak for my high school. And this is right in the middle of COVID. And these kids were just getting back to school, and the principal called and said, listen, these kids are having a rough year. They haven't been together the whole year. I want you to come in and inspire them. I want you to say something you never talked about before. And I said, whoa, this is the night before. I'll have to come up with new content, right?
Right.
All night long, I'm going through this in my head, and all of a sudden it hit me. This last couple years have not just been about COVID. It's been about social justice, police questions, elections, hurricanes. All these things started to stack on everybody. And all of a sudden, you see the suicide rates are up. You see all the things that are going on right now. They're not positive. So my goal in this book was to talk about how do you turn the turmoil of what you've been going through into triumph? And I used not only the stories, some of the stories we talked about today, an expanded version, but also I talk about how I turned going from, you know, turmoil to triumph, from post-traumatic stress, which I did not have, to PTGS, post-traumatic growth syndrome. How can you grow out of a turmoil? And that's what this book's about. And so, Lisa, this was supposed to go out actually last November. But after I swam with the Navy SEALs last August, my team implored me, do not send it out now. Write about the chapter about the journey from zero to swim with the Navy SEAL. So I took the book back, wrote some additional content about that experience. Because that was actually when the turmoil turned to triumph. I thought it was after the plane crash. I thought all that stuff, right? But it was actually about 400 meters out to go to New York City in the middle of the Hudson River with my wingman, Suzanne, and it hit me. And it's like, that's the moment where everything turned around. And so I had to put myself through all this. It's like you were talking, we all have to go through this journey because it's not going to be pixie dust and sunshine. So that's why I'm so excited about this book. And we're about 2 weeks out. And yeah, I think it's like the 20th of June. We're supposed to have it on Amazon. And then we're going to go to print after that. So I'm really excited. I'd love for you to check it out.
Very good. Well, Dave, thank you so much for being on the show. I cannot wait for our listeners to learn from you and to hear your story and keep shining, my friend. I mean, you're making a difference. And I know that your life mission is to make an impact and a difference in people's lives. So you're doing that. So thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you, Lisa, for having me. God bless.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.